¿Quieres pedo, güey? No, chale.
Chale, chale, chale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
Ya sabes que a mí me vale.
Me vale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
You know that I'm down for the
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Hey guys, thanks for joining today. I appreciate you taking time out of your day and deciding to jump on the podcast. Today, I have ex-presidential candidate Andrew Yang on the show. You may ask, why does he have Andrew Yang on a wrestling podcast? Well, I'll tell you why. So Andrew Yang, not only being a pretty cool guy, as you're going to hear, but he is an advocate for wrestlers not being independent contractors. You may ask, why is this important? Well, for years, wrestlers in the wrestling industry have been considered independent contractors and not employees. Why does this matter, you ask? So, wrestlers at the highest organizations, you can guess who that may be, after they're flown into the city that they are wrestling in, the wrestlers are responsible for renting their own rental cars and getting their own hotels and getting to the building on a certain time before getting fined. Why does this matter? Just think if a quarterback, like your favorite quarterback in the NFL, let's say Dak Prescott from the Dallas Cowboys, only using the Dallas Cowboys because that's my team. Don't turn off the podcast if that's not your team, which half of America we'll probably be thinking about doing. But anyways, just think of Dak Prescott being flown into Philadelphia because they're playing the Philadelphia Eagles that night. And the Dallas Cowboys saying, okay, Dak, go ahead and get your own hotel room. I need you to be at the building by noon. Make sure your uniform is pressed and clean. And if you're late, we may fine you up to our discretion. That is what it's like to be a wrestler at the biggest organizations in the world right now. It's funny when I'm talking to like my glow actresses and other actors and actresses in Hollywood, and I explain this to them, they can't believe it. They're kind of flabbergasted and thinking that I'm like, really? Is this really how it is? And I'm like, yes, it is. It really is that way. And it's weird that a $3.3 billion publicly traded company is still treating their wrestlers, their independent contractors, this way in this day and age. Kind of strange. Now, has wrestling come a long way since, you know, the 80s, since my dad's era and since all of them? Well, yeah, sure, absolutely. But it definitely still has a long way to go. So that is why I have Andrew Yang on this podcast today. And not only that, you're going to hear what a really like just cool guy he is. He's a guy that actually cares about making things better, I believe. And I really just had a good time talking to him and discussing a lot of other topics and just finding out more about what makes him tick, who his favorite wrestlers were when he was a kid, and his favorite moments. So hold on tight. Next is Andrew Yang. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I was actually very surprised when I heard that you were a wrestling fan and that you had this stance on the independent contractor status of professional wrestlers. So let's get right into it. What are your actual thoughts about it?
Well, you know better than anyone that we're decades overdue on having performers get treated more fairly, and your family has experienced it so directly. I know you grew up in the business, and we all saw what happened to Eddie. You know, the lifestyle you all endure, it's really, really punishing, it seems. I mean, like, you know, talking to performers like yourselves, like I look at you and just think, like, wow, Chavo's been through so much over his career that you know, makes it very, very hard to have like a healthy old age and have a family too that stays whole while you're on the road so much during the year.
Yeah, definitely. It's not easy, you know, being on the road as much as we are and, you know, trying to have a family life and all that, you know, a normal life, I guess you'd call it, you know. It's definitely not easy being on the road like that. It's great, you know, if you're a young single guy and, you know, that's what you're doing, you're traveling the world, making a little money. Hey, awesome. Great. But then once you, you know, all of a sudden you have, you know, try to better yourself and have a mortgage and, you know, kids and family and retirement funds, and it's tough. It's not easy.
No, another thing that I saw you in was the special on Chris Benoit, you know, and he was obviously very close to the family too. And there was something messed up about how, I mean, obviously what he did with his family is like reprehensible and terrible and tragic. But expunging him from the history books was such like an odd, you know, not to say that it is necessarily wrong, but to me, wrestling was such like a huge part of that story. You know what I mean? Like that, like it seemed a little bit one-sided to me for them to present it like this person never existed or these terrible events didn't happen, instead of digging in and saying, okay, maybe there were some factors that had to do with that tragedy that are deeper than one individual. Maybe it was something about, frankly, the way performers are supported or not supported. To me, like the incentives around what wrestlers go through, it's like if I'm a wrestler busting my ass, like I'm an independent contractor because they refuse to name me an employee, so I don't have any security. I feel like my spot is always in jeopardy. That they create an environment where if I get hurt and I need to heal, like I have no idea if I'm going to get my spot back unless I'm one of the top people. And so you wind up in this rhythm where you're like, well, I guess I should like pop some painkillers and like get myself out there because, you know, like, you know, you don't have much of a choice. And, you know, we've seen very tragic results from aspects of that. So, you know, that there's like a, but what you described too, it's like it'd be one thing if there was some greater equity between wrestlers and employers where like wrestlers could actually say no and feel like, you know what, like my family needs me right now, or you know what, like I've got a nagging injury, I'd really like to have recover so I can give the fans my best and the company my best. But that does not seem like the dynamic that exists in real life. Like instead it's like this inequity and like a form, what you just described then, it just made me think of like, you're almost like in some kind of crazy indentured servitude where it's like, oh gosh, I've got like these bills to pay. And like, this is the, like, you know, this is the way I can pay them. And I don't really have much of a choice in the matter except to push myself to levels that might not be things that I can, you know, that like the human body is designed to take.
You know, that's such a sticky subject and I don't necessarily blame WWE for treating Chris Benoit the way that they did after his death, as far as kind of expunging him from the record books and almost pretending that he never even existed. It's just so tough, man, because of, you know, his ending acts, the heinousness of it. And just, you know, I don't blame them for wanting to totally distance themselves from Chris. It just, it's tough because, you know, he was my friend, you know, Nancy was my friend. It's just such a tough situation, and it's, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't in that one. But one thing that I think that did come out of that tragedy is the WWE really now looking into concussions and taking them very, very seriously, because I guess, you know, the same as any other sport out there or any other contact business, if you want to call it, that the way it used to be was you get your bell rung and just you go back out there and do it. And we just didn't know how dangerous the concussions actually were. And now with all the different impact testing that WWE does and other wrestling organizations do, and just the emphasis they put on protecting your head, you know, if anything did come out of Chris and you know, just other people getting injured and just, you know, falling off, I would have to say would be the concussion protocol. But back to your other comment, yeah, it's definitely weird that, you know, we don't really have a say as far as in money things in WWE. We don't really know how much we're going to get paid for a match. You know, there's a lot of, you know, factors involved. I get it. But at the same time, we're not privy to those factors. We don't really know. There was times when I was wrestling on a show and, you know, I would just get paid the same amount no matter what. It was like, it's just whatever they valued you at, but what constitute their value of you? So it's just really strange to be able to know what you're going to get paid and what other business is that actually happening. You know, my plumber knows exactly how much he's going to get paid. He's an independent contractor. You know, when he comes over to my house, it's like, if you want me to do the job, this is how much it is. I mean, there was times when I went in after like a pay-per-view, like wrestling Rey Mysterio. I walked into Johnny Ace's office, John Laurinaitis, who was the head of talent relations at the time, and asked him and said, look, you know, I think that we should have been paid more. And that time he kind of went over the books, whatever, and kind of agreed and said, yep, you're right, sure. And, you know, paid us more. But there was times that we'd do it and they'd say, no, I think that's what you should be paid. You should be paid. And there's a story with, you know, Chris Jericho that, I know it's a, you know, famous story. He's talked about it. Well, that he was on a main event of a WrestleMania and he was the champion and he wrestled Triple H. Later when he found out that Triple H made, you know, like $150,000 more than he did. I don't know the exact number, just kind of throwing the number out there, but I know it was an extreme amount. He was like so upset. He walked into Vince's office and talked to JR at the time, Jim Ross, who was the head of talent relations, and was like insulted and said, you know, I need more money. This is not right. I was a champion. You know, they tried to kind of come back and prove their point. And in the end right there, Vince McMahon was like, JR, cut him a check. So they cut him a good sized check. I don't know exactly how much, but I know they did, which is
That's bizarre too. When you're like, look, if I hadn't stormed into your office, like I got paid $150,000 less than the next guy, and so it makes you think like, shit, should I have been storming into this office, you know, like some other matches too? Chris and I talked on his podcast the other day, and he said something that I thought was very interesting, where he said, look, I was in a movie, MacGruber, and they still send me checks. He's like, I was main eventing WrestleMania and on all these matches in the WWE Network. They don't send me anything. And I was like, well, if you look at the value that they're getting from archived matches from Chris, from you, from, like, you know, all of these other performers over the years, and then you look at the amount they're generating in the WWE Network, people should be getting residuals from that. You know what I mean? But you sign like this contract where it's like, nah, we own that stuff. You know, in other industries, performers have fought for various residuals and royalties the way that Chris was talking about it. Like, yeah, I get a random $27 check from MacGruber. You know, it's like, meanwhile, like the bulk of his work's obviously in the WWE Network.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy that Chris is getting residuals from a movie that he did, you know, whatever it was, 10 years ago, and not getting in residuals from WWE on the WWE Network, you know. Now being part of a union, you know, the Screen Actors Guild, I see just how it's just so much different treated in wrestling. And not that a union is the end-all, be-all of things, you know, but still, we have somebody looking out for us, and I see just the difference in whether you're, you know, still 1099 at a time, independent contractors at times, but you're taking care of, you have somebody looking out, you have a union looking out for your best interests, and, you know, I know exactly how much I'm getting paid, I know exactly when my, you know, my lunch is, I know my turnaround, basically saying that you have to get an X amount of time off after you finish shooting before you can come back. You know, so many different, you know, factors involved that, you know, the Screen Actors Guild actually takes care of.
Yeah, there are three lenses that you could take when you look at professional wrestling. So one of them would be pro sports, where you're like, hey, this is pro sports. And that's the Dak Prescott example. And there you have collective bargaining. You do have unions. You have athletes getting 50% of the overall revenue and a ton of protections. So that's version number one, wrestling as sport. Number two, you have wrestling as filmed entertainment. So then you have the Screen Actors Guild and residuals and transparency and negotiation and all of these rules around it. And then you have the reality we're dealing with now, which is wrestling as the modern inheritor of like carny days where it was like no rules, do whatever the heck you want. I'm a promoter. I come up with some arrangement and then we hope that I live up to my arrangement. And, oh, I call you all independent contractors because then I don't have to provide any health care, retirement benefits, family leave, paid time off. I don't have any legal responsibility. So that's the world we're in right now. But everyone can see very clearly that WWE has much, much more control over people's activities than would be legitimately the case under a genuine independent contractor relationship. Where one of the things that's set me off down this trail recently is a performer reached out to me about WWE saying can't use Cameo, can't use Twitch, can't use these third-party platforms because you're representing the company in that context too. And that was just one example of how it's a fiction that they call people independent contractors, because in what world does a company have so much control over things that you do and say and where and how you act when you're theoretically not even quote unquote working or not even like on duty?
Yeah, it's definitely weird when I have a company that I'm supposed to be an independent contractor in and they're telling me what I can wear, when I gotta wear it, getting fined if I don't wear it, you know. In fact, I know a referee that was there from before that actually got fired. Now, this is from his mouth. I wasn't there in the room, but got fired from the WWE for violating the dress code because he had a KISS t-shirt on walking around. And they're like, you know, you should be in business casual. And he's like, oh, sorry, I would put on this. They say, oh, we're just going to have to let you go for that. So, you know, there could have been some other underlying reasons or whatever. You know, that's the reason that they gave him for getting fired for a dress code violation.
It's time to come out of the dark ages, Chavo. And I'm grateful to you for reaching out to me so we could have this conversation. I am eager to help modernize the treatment of performers so that they're more in sync with the reality, with also the right thing to do, where WWE is worth $3.3 billion, the McMahons are billionaires. Like at this point, they should just stand up and be like, you know what? We've been made extraordinarily wealthy by the blood, sweat, and tears of all these performers. It's time for us to modernize the way we treat these performers, you know, and we'll leave a bit of money on the table. C'est la vie, like at least we'll know that we did the right thing. You know, I mean, it's years past the time when they should have done that. And the fact that they have not done that means that we may have to step in and have the government say that this misclassification has been going on for far too long, which is something that I'm eager to do. And you know, I may be part of the new administration in some capacity, where we can help make these changes. But I'm excited to do it. I'm excited to be connected with you. And I'd love to learn more about some of the things that you saw and experienced over your years, because you've seen the entire industry, you know, from angles that most of us only read about.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to help and be connected, you know, to this cause. You know, definitely inform you more and talk more about it. I'm sure we'll get off of this and wrap a little bit more for sure. It's something that I think it's just long overdue, like you think, and I think it's time for a change.
Yeah, just look, if you looked at it again, the dollars and cents, you look at it and say, okay, what are the economic costs? Am I making you employees and giving you contracts that are more accurate? You know, times 100 performers in any given year, like, you know, they can easily bear that cost. So it's going to be interesting how we accomplish this, Chavo. There are going to be a few different paths that I already have in mind. I don't want to give away the bard too much, but what of the
yeah, don't do that, don't give away your master plan.
but one of the interesting ingredients is former performers. So here's the deal: if I'm one of like the 100 current WWE performers, it's kind of hard for me to make too much of a stink, because they'll you know, kick me to the curb, they'll limit my opportunities, they'll generally just make my life miserable, and like I've been working my tail off for years to try and get into the position I'm at, so like I don't want to to run afoul of the McMahons and be talking to, you know, like the government about how people are being mistreated. Like, you know, I also know that's not the culture, because the culture is that, you know, you're like the best in the world and like incredibly self-reliant, and they tell you that it's like a team effort, and so like it's going to feel like you're going against the grain. But there's a whole category of people, and I guess you might be in this category, of former performers who are all like, enough is enough. And I have tons of former performers reaching out to me saying, look, anything I can do to help, like, I'm on board because this stuff is wrong.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that anybody who is not with the WWE anymore, is not under that blanket, you know, they're going to tell you like it really is. And they're not going to sit there and not want to jeopardize their job or, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you. But now that they're not with the WWE and they're not being fed by the WWE, they're going to tell you what they really think.
No, comparing it to the NFL is right, because, you know, NFL now takes concussions much more seriously than they did. I mean, are they doing enough? They're doing more. That's good. Comparing it to old-time Hollywood, also very apt. You know, we have to try and drag wrestling into the 21st century, in my mind. One of the fascinating things about this story, Chavo, to me, is how the mainstream media completely ignores professional wrestling. Like, the whole thing just blows my mind. It's like a multi-billion-dollar enterprise with some of the top ratings on cable, and everyone just looks the other way like it doesn't exist. They're like, it's right before our very eyes.
Yeah, it's very much like that. I mean, we got a lot of, a lot of steam on our side from the John Oliver special, you know, when he talked about on his show, Late Night with John Oliver, and talked about the discrepancies in, you know, in the independent contractor status of wrestlers, you know.
Well, that's one of the ways these changes happen, Javo, is like, is you have press, and press helps with awareness and the rest of it. But let's say you have the McMahons and they're making an extra X million a year from misclassifying workers. And so the question is, how do you make it so that it's easier for them to start treating people the way they should be treated rather than continuing to mistreat them? And people end up responding to their incentives. You know what I mean? Like the WWE has a playbook where anytime negative press comes their way, they just say, well, we'll just hunker down and let it blow over, and people will forget about it, and it's wrestling. You know, it's like no one really will dig that hard into it. So I agree with you. Like, that's the playbook. The thing that they're going to see on this one is that, one, it's well past time. The public understands the practices and the abuses that have been going on. I can tell you that based upon the folks reaching out to me, there are a lot of folks who really want to see things change. You know, like it's no longer like this marginal thing. It's like a lot of people like you are looking at it being like, okay, enough's enough. And, you know, we need to just make it so it's easier for them to change than to not change. You know what I mean? Like, you have to try and create like enough pressure and incentives where it becomes like an easier choice for them. But that's one of the things that people underestimate all the time. And we're seeing it in different aspects of American life right now, where people think like, oh, if we talk about this stuff, then like they'll change their ways. And that's not really the way these organizations work. Like, you know, these organizations are looking up being like, well, it's worth millions of dollars to me not to change. They're going to have to get dragged kicking and screaming, probably. One of the things that I hold out hope for is that they'll see the writing on the wall and say like, well, we're going to do the right thing before we're forced to do the right thing, because then at least we can take credit.
I mean, we don't really care how it happens as long as it happens. Like the drug testing, when they implied that, you know, we had some wrestlers dying, including my uncle. So, you know, they implemented the drug testing protocol. So, you know, and I don't know if it was just to save face, but, you know, it was just very coincidental that finally these guys are dying and getting this huge press and making, you know, bad press of WWE. Then they're implementing this, heart scans and, you know, checking your heart health, concussion scans, you know, and your impact testing and your drug testing. It's just, you know, it's very coincidental, but whatever it is, it's just good that it's happening, because now you have wrestlers are being taken care of a little bit more. And, you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I'm eager to get in there and try and make these changes, Chavo. I'll definitely reach out to you.
Yes, definitely. Please do.
You know, like as we make progress. But the thing I'm going to share now, it's probably like out for your listeners, is I'm passionate about this because I grew up with you and Eddie and Chris and all these folks that, you know, performed on my TV. You know, I will say something, and I hope you take this the right way or whatever. Like, I was so used to you being the young one, you know, now when I realized that you and I are, like, about the same age, I'm like, what the heck's going on here? Like, you know, we really, you know, time is passed on us faster than I'd realized, Chavo.
But grew up with me. Yeah, we're the same age. You know, in doing research on you a lot, and before we got here, we have a lot in common because I, too, was very young for my grade and immature at the same time, you know, late bloomer. You know, I was a 16-year-old senior in high school, you know, so I see that you are too. And I think that's just kind of why I am the way I am, that you don't ever lose that. It pushes you to try harder. So then finally, when you get able to do something about it, that you kind of do something about it, you know. So I don't know if that's something you feel too.
I was also the little guy, as you found in your research, where I remember being the little guy. It's funny now, Chavo, where now I'm more of like an establishment figure, but I still feel very much on the outside. Like, I don't think you really lose that stuff. You know what I mean? And, you know, maybe this is one reason why I want to fight for wrestlers so bad, is I think like wrestlers are on the outside too, in like your own way, where it's like its own world. It's like a world that exists independent of this other world. And like in some circles, people still don't understand it or don't appreciate it or look down on it or say like, oh, it's fake and the rest of it. And it's funny to say this about people who are so well-trained and athletic and imposing and the rest of it. But like, I genuinely feel like the wrestlers are the little guy in this situation. You know what I mean? Like you have this billion-dollar company running roughshod on them. And what you said about family is so profound, because I've seen it in other walks of life and entrepreneurship and the rest of it. It's like shit changes when you have a family, you know, like all of a sudden you have kids and the rest of it, and like your responsibilities go from 0 to 10 pretty quick. And then you're like, wait a minute, like the stuff I was doing like a few years ago really doesn't make as much sense now.
Yeah, absolutely. You start thinking for not just yourself, you have to think for others now. So your decisions make, you know, they definitely change. You're not just going out and buying the big car and stuff. No, now you're thinking, well, I got this mortgage and I got to put these kids through college and, you know, all the other things that I got to clothe them and, you know, all the other things that go along with it, you know?
Yeah. Like I have real responsibilities now. Like people are going to.
Yeah, I know. Right.
You know, it's wild for me, Chavo, because I've made some very big choices, you know, professionally, where it's like, I'm going to run for president. Like I'm going to like leave my family. Like, and maybe there's another reason why I relate to wrestlers. Like I was on the road for, you know, 4 days a week for 2 years and the rest of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you get it.
And it's been funny. It's that like, as my responsibilities have ticked up, it's almost like my career has been like, growing and my responsibilities have been growing, and like they were just lined up enough where I could do what I did. You know what I mean? But there were times when I was like, whoa, I'm like glad I was in position to make that decision, because the right decision, you know, when you have that much responsibility, sometimes the right decision is to like pull it back.
Yeah, man, well, I'm going to hold you to it. You know, I know you're saying this, and we get so tired of politicians are always saying all these grand ideas, and you know, then they get elected and then you never hear from them again. You know, you never hear about that idea again. So I'll check back in with you on that, man. I'm going to hold you to it, man.
That's the other part of it, Chavo, is no one fact checks anyone on stuff after the fact either. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that, like they said it and then they get elected and everyone's like, forget they said it. So you can feel free to hold me to this. I don't consider myself really a politician in that regard. But it does infuriate me that like no one's actually checking up on anything. Like it's one of the reasons why we're doing so badly, is that politicians come in and they say this stuff, and then, you know, it's like no one's really getting judged upon whether like the policies are working really. You know, it's like getting filtered through media and the rest of it, where like things have not been working for a lot of people for a long time. And like we need to be better about saying like, look, I'm going to do this thing. And then we check and be like, did you do this thing? First, we have to give you the power to do the thing. And that's another problem, because a lot of these cases, like, you know, a lot of these elected officials, it's wild where, like sometimes they're not even able to do the things that they say they're going to do. So we have to give you the ability, but then we have to check up and say like, well, like, did you deliver? And then were the results, you know, what we'd hoped for. But I'm with you in the fact that, I'm not going away. This issue's gonna like only go away if we make it better. And so please do hold me accountable to it. You know, even though I haven't been elected to anything just yet, but it's something I'm very excited to do, and like, it will give me joy and pride, to make this change. And I can see it clearly in my mind's eye, Chavo, where the folks who are inside are going to be like looking at it being like, huh, I wonder if anything is going to change, but they're going to keep their heads down because that's what 99.99% of humans would do in their situation. but they're going to be looking around being like, I wonder, like have like a side eye being like, I wonder if this is going to go like in another direction. And then we're going to make it go another direction. They're going to have their head up, and then there's going to be like an acknowledgement. Like, we can't ask anyone to be a martyr. We can't ask anyone to like risk their career on this. You know, it's funny. It's like, I'll take the risk. Like, you know, I don't work for Vince.
Me either. on a side note, what did you think about that first debate?
It was rough going, Chavo. It was rough, but I've tried to have a positive outlook where, you know, it didn't change the dynamic of the race. And the dynamic of the race has been trending towards Joe for quite some time, because Trump has been botching things right and left. And, you know, and so I feel like the debate was kind of a microcosm of that, where you looked up and were like, what am I seeing here? I'm not sure many people looked at that and said, sign me up for 4 more years of this guy. Like, I don't think that was like the vibe that a lot of people got. So despite the difficulty of the experience for viewers, I actually came away from it kind of positive.
You know, I was, I watched the whole thing and, I was kind of insulted just by the way, you know, they weren't even debating it, except, you know, especially we know who were just arguing and not proving any points. And it was just like, you know, as a voter, and there's a lot of undecided voters out there, they wanted to hear the candidates, what they're running on and what they're actually thinking about their policies. You know, one was trying to say something and then the other one was arguing, and then this one got caught up in the argument. And man, it was just, I thought it was just very, just horrible, just insulting to the American voters.
Yeah, it was that, Chavo. And you're right. This race is essentially baked. Depending upon where you look at it, 70 to 90% of people have their minds made up already. You're talking about a very, very small batch of undecideds. I have a feeling even the undecideds know how they're going to vote, honestly. It's, you know, you hope for better. I just hope we can turn the page, get this behind us. I'm obviously for Joe and Kamala, and there's a chance I'll be part of the administration if Joe and Kamala win, and so I can do some of these things that you and I are discussing. And if it's not me directly, one of the things that I'm finding to be the case is that I can contact the person I need to contact pretty easily, which is also kind of fun. So even if I'm not directly like you know, like that person, I'm going to be able to call a person and be like, hey, have you looked at what's going on with the designation of pro wrestlers and as independent contractors? I think that's really not kosher at all. So we're going to get this done one way or another. But I will say, from my perspective, my job will be easier if Joe and Kamala are in the White House. And I can call either one of those two, like, you know, like that. So
that must be nice. So we do a little thing here on Suplexes and Cervezas where we, I give some rapid fire questions. You know, you just kind of give your quick answers, what you really, what you think. It's just something for your fans to kind of just get to know you a little bit more. So, you down? You want to play?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Okay. Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair?
I'm gonna choose the third option and say Macho Man Randy Savage. I was definitely not a Hogan guy. And but Ric Flair, I didn't appreciate him as much as other people appreciated him. I was always like, why does everyone love this dude so much? Like I
Well, that was my next question, was Macho Man Randy Savage or Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
I was a huge fan of both those guys. You know, like I loved them both. During that match, the Great WrestleMania 3 match, which was one of the formative matches of my childhood, I was pulling for Ricky Steamboat. But over the course of their careers, I became an enormous Macho Man fan, especially after he became champion. And then I was like, finally, we're done with this Hogan nonsense. And then Hogan got the title back, and I was like, no. And then there was this weird period where Vince was trying to retire Randy, and I was like, why isn't Randy main eventing anymore? They had him like an announcing the whole thing. It was bizarre. Yeah, it was weird. I was like, this man could still freaking like be the champ. What's going on here? But yeah, so huge Randy, Macho Man Savage fan.
Yeah, that was such an like iconic match, you know, for both of those guys.
Yeah. More wrestling questions, though. I want to see how I do. Keep going.
Demolition or the Road Warriors?
Road Warriors for sure. LOD / Road Warriors.
Were you a Rockers fan or a British Bulldogs fan?
Wow. I mean, I'm a huge Shawn Michaels fan now, from everything he's accomplished, but I love the British Bulldogs. Davey Boy Smith, that one was tragic. The fact that he passed so quickly is, you know, terrible to me. That family, you know, had a rough go for a while. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time was Owen Hart. I thought Owen Hart was tremendous.
You know, I never met Owen. We, always knew the same people, but we're just in different organizations and we never crossed paths. But, you know, everybody really speaks fondly of Owen. I mean, so much.
He seemed like a great guy, too. You know, just a random wrestling observation that, so I remember when Brett left the WWE to go to WCW, and Davey Boy Smith and Jim Neidhart went with him, but for whatever reason, like, they were nowhere near, like, the main event picture. They would just show up randomly and do, like, random things, and I was like, why would you not, like, just, like, literally, these were guys who were, like, running WWE, like, last month, like Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation, and then all of a sudden, like, Neidhart and Davey Boy Smith are, like, doing, like, freaking, like, random TV matches with nobody.
You know, WCW just had so many people on under contract. It's like they were trying to sign people so that they wouldn't go to the WWE. So, you know, you had guys like, you know, Anvil and Davey Boy Smith that came over and just, you know, kind of just made their money and, you know, did a few matches here and there. And, you know, they weren't near the big draws that they were in WWE, but it wasn't their fault. They just weren't used.
I just remember as a fan watching that, I was like, that was just a weird, I was like, that's weird. So as you can tell, like I was kind of a Hart Foundation guy too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the Hart Foundation were great. You know, I got a really cool, quick Bret Hart story. So, you know, Bret Hart was the champion in the WWF at the time and then left there and came over to WCW. And when he did, you know, everybody had their own dressing rooms, you know, all the big stars, you know, you had Hogan his own and Lex Luger and Sting and the NWO had theirs. Goldberg had his, you know, so of course, you know, Bret Hart could have had his own dressing room with just him in there, but he was dressing by us, like by, you know, like me, Eddie, Benoit, Jericho, Steve Regal, Finley, a whole bunch of other people, but he was sitting there dressing by us right next to us. So years later, when I was in WWE at the time and Bret had come back, I asked him, I go, why, man? Why didn't you just get your own dressing room like everybody else? And he was like, well, you guys were the ones having the really good matches. So I wanted to be close to you guys so that if we wrestled, you know, you guys would trust me and we could all have some good matches together. So I really thought that was kind of a cool compliment and just shows you what kind of guy Bret, you know, is. He's a super, just a great guy, super cool guy, and just, you know, just a real guy.
That's a good Bret Hart story.
Yeah, he was a good guy. Okay, next question. Jake the Snake Roberts or Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
Obviously Jake the Snake Roberts on multiple levels. Yeah, so Jake the Snake. And I guess I'll leave it there as to like why I feel like that one's so easy.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. We won't touch that. Okay, last one. Ultimate Warrior,
gosh,
or Roddy Piper?
I was never a Warrior guy. Roddy Piper, his appeal didn't quite work on me either, honestly. But if you had to choose between those two, I would choose Roddy Piper, because I just found the Warrior to be just one-dimensional and annoying, just not very interesting.
So you caught on quick to the just running into the ring and shaking the ropes and not really being able to wrestle or whatever?
If you couldn't wrestle, I was unlikely to be a fan of yours. So as you can tell, like, I did not like Hogan. I did not like Warrior. I did like the workers, people like you, who were really talented and proficient in the ring. And that doesn't describe Piper either. I mean, like...
Yeah, totally. Well, Andrew, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time again out of your day to talk to all the fans from Suplexes and Cervezas. I know you're a busy guy, so I don't want to keep you all day long, but again, I really, really appreciate it, and we'll be in touch. I'm sure we will be.
Thanks, Chavo. All the best to you and yours. Have a great time out in Australia. And yeah, we're going to get some great things done together, brother.
Awesome, man. I look forward to it. I look forward to talking to you again.
Keep an eye out, for sure.
And there you have it, my interview with Andrew Yang. Looks like we'll be getting some things done in wrestling here in the future, I hope. And I hope we'll just make wrestling better for everybody. Better for the wrestlers, better for the fans, and better for the promoters. It's just, that's what happens when you make wrestling better. Everybody wins. So again, thank you to Andrew Yang. Great guy. We really do have a lot in common, and just really cool talking to him, you know, and I'm sure we'll be working together again. On that note, viva la raza! Shot of Guerrero Tequila. Man, I start wrecking shop like Bon Jovi. Sas, stay pa' atrás. Like Roberto Duran, you'll be staying on my. Round the outside, see you round the outside. If I don't catch you here, then I'll see you outside. Then I'll Snoop Dogg you and drop you like a hot. And break your ass off like a crooked ass cop. See, this is the part where your face beats the ground. Step up, jump up, and get beat down. Rhythm of a beat. I wear my bandana like a king wears a crown. Step up, jump up, and get.